Show starring Jim Pavka. Maybe your mother told you never talk politics and religion in polite company. Well, Jim Pavka's mother never told him that. So come on, enjoy the forbidden pleasure. You can participate in the conversation at 1-800-259-9231. Today's show is sponsored by Gun Owners of America, gunowners.org. And now, here's Jim.
Happy Sunday afternoon to you. This is the Culture Repair Show. And today it's a little experiment in the theory of relativity. Because we actually are taping this show on Friday evening, so you won't be able to call in at the phone number given at the top of the show, and I won't give it out or email me. We're doing this because I'm going to be in Washington, D.C. at the time that this show is airing, getting ready to meet with members of Congress and key members of their staff. We have 10 appointments scheduled as of right now to promote and look for a sponsor for the Read the Bills Act. And my commitment to you knows no bounds. There's too much happening in the news right now, and we have been waiting for a very long time to have a very special guest on that I'll be introducing in the next segment. I'll just give you a little hint. He helps make this show possible through his organization that sponsors the show. And so we'll be bringing on a very special guest in the next segment. But I want to talk about what everybody's going to be talking about this weekend and the Sunday morning TV shows. You'll find the talking heads talking about it. It won't have gone away, and that is the president's speech and what's going on in New Orleans. And in fact, even with our guests coming in, we're going to talk a little bit about New Orleans as well. The president's speech had several elements to it, and the first of which is that he's looking to set up Gulf Opportunity Zones. This is an old idea. It's a supply-side economics idea. The idea is simply that you would set up what's called an enterprise zone. It's an area that is not going to be taxed at the same level, and the idea is that it will create more jobs. And they're going to turn the Gulf area into, they call it an opportunity zone, but it's just a new word for an old concept, enterprise zones. It's an even slicker word than what's really going on here, and that's corporate welfare. Now, I don't want to suggest that because someone is not paying taxes, they're getting welfare, but why should people in that area get the benefit of not having to pay taxes and set up businesses and the rest of us all still have to pay? And you say, well, Jim, that's obvious. That area's been blighted, and in order to kind of restart it and get it moving, it needs special incentives. Well, isn't that true for our whole economy? I mean, this to me illustrates a much broader point. The Davis-Bacon rules have also been suspended there. These are the rules that have to do with prevailing wage and overtime. They've been suspended for the reconstruction so that people can work overtime in police departments and so forth to service the people down there. And they're doing it because they can't afford, they don't want to spend a higher amount of money. We're already spending an exorbitant amount of money to reconstruct New Orleans. But then the question becomes, why do we have a Davis-Bacon law? Now, it's interesting there are unions that are objecting, and Senator Ted Kennedy's objecting to the lifting of the Davis-Bacon minimums that the president ordered. This is one thing that I think potentially he's done right. And they're objecting because they're saying, well, the construction has to be done in a professional manner. But what's really code for is a form of racism. What they're saying is that the people who actually lived in those communities aren't qualified to do a good job. They don't need to take a part in it. They can be unemployed so that political supporters of the Democratic Party, the major unions, can continue to collect their prevailing wages. Well, they've lost that battle. The second point in the president's speech last night, and as I said, I'm talking to you on Friday evening here, but it'll still be big news on Sunday. You're not missing anything. Was an urban homesteading act that would allow people to build homes on government property. They would acquire this property based on qualifying A, to participate in the lottery, and B, winning that lottery, and C, by making a promise, a pledge, to build a house on that property that they would occupy. These two proposals are going to cost a lot of money. They're going to cost the government a lot of money, and the question that I have to come back to is the same one that I've talked about for the last 2 weeks, and that is, where are we going to get all the money? Why is the federal government involved in this matter? It's amazing to me. There's so many different things that could be done on a market level, on a volunteer, on a private level. And in fact, the president has to acknowledge it. The governor has to acknowledge it. The mayor has to acknowledge it. The media has to acknowledge it. That the people, the American people, have been there And the federal government even blocked rescue supplies from getting to people. Clearly, the government had, the government's role was negligible at best up to this point. Now they're finally starting to maybe to get their act together. But how much trouble did people have to go through? And how much trouble are they going to face standing in line, trying to prove their identity, trying to get everything else about their life reconstructed? I really think corporations who were willing to do charitable acts and charities and neighbors and family members could have done this with a whole lot more compassion and at a whole lot less cost. Now, this is a topic we've covered in previous shows, and I don't have time to go into that right now. But here's the one that kind of really got me. He called on the Department of Homeland Security to do a review. To do a review of why they did not take care of the situation, why they weren't ready and available at the time that they were needed. And this was just stunning to me. This is like the proverbial fox watching the hen house. We didn't have enough money. We didn't know that this kind of disaster would happen. I don't know, boss. I mean, is that the kind of thing that they're going to do here? The Department of Homeland Security, we were told that we had to centralize all of this stuff. But the problem after 9/11 was that all these different agencies were not talking to each other. And so FEMA got moved into Homeland Security, this brand new cabinet boondoggle. They moved them all in there so that they could centralize and coordinate and better deliver services. And this was the worst delivery in the light of a crisis that our government has done, has had yet. Centralizing does not work. But it's interesting, even though he's calling for a review of the Department of Homeland Security, the president wants greater federal authority. Now, this is another amazing thing. In a business, if someone fails, if you fail your customers, you lose the business. But in a monopoly like the government, it's an excuse for more government. And this is why people believe in conspiracies, because they see the government fails, or at least it fails from our point of view, and then it seems to benefit the people who failed. The president wants more power, more authority to respond quicker in a crisis. And worst of all, he wants to give new powers to the army because they're best able to respond. So he wants to be able to step in. Folks, the smallest little tornado could turn into a big disaster because we're going to send the troops in and declare martial law. And bad things are happening on the streets of New Orleans right now. We're going to talk about one of those things with our next guest. They're happening even this week, they've been happening, even after the government supposedly has begun to get control of the situation. Not being reported in the mainstream media, but we're going to talk about it here. If you listen to other programming on the Genesis Communications Network, you've heard about it. So I'm opposed to these proposals that the president's making. I don't want to see the army coming in and being able to take over. I don't want the federal government being the first line of defense in this situation. That's what a National Guard is for, and that's what neighbors, charities, and community organizations and private businesses are capable of doing. There are so many ways to fund this stuff. I mean, for example, the president was giving out an 800 number and a website for the Freedom Corps, saying we want to reunite families and help to put those families together. Well, this could have been done privately. All the president would have had to do, and the previous presidents who've been out schlepping for funds, was say the word of whatever that website or that whatever that charity was that would take on this task as often as they said the words Red Cross in the last 2 weeks. And it would have gotten enough publicity. It could have been done privately, put these families together. And what about police officers going down there? Corporations would have been willing to sponsor them to go down there. I got some pork to tell you about on the other side of the break. And one more incredible story that I hope to share with you before the show's over. Stay tuned on the other side of the break. We're going to have a very special guest joining us. If you're an internet political activist, pay close attention. The Federal Election Commission, FEC for short, is about to make your life difficult. I'm Jim Babka with DownsizeEC.org. Last September, a federal judge ruled, quote, to permit an entire class of political communications to be unregulated would permit an evasion of campaign finance laws. That means if you forward a campaign press release using an email list, post a campaign ad on your blog, or link to a candidate's website from your homepage, then you may well be required to register with the government, and file complicated reports. You'll probably need a lawyer, too. And what the FEC won't tell you is that none of these rules will apply to MSNBC or the New York Times website. This shouldn't happen in America. You have First Amendment rights. Visit DownsizeDC.org to free the Internet. A one-sentence law can stop this unconstitutional insanity. That's DownsizeDC.org. Is the Culture Repair Show, a special taped edition. I'm in Washington, D.C. as you're listening to this, but I go the distance for you folks. I'm here even as I'm supposed to be packing on a Friday evening, telling you what's going on, keeping you up to date and informed, and bringing you interesting guests, which I'm going to do in just a moment. But I want to wrap up on the point that I was making as we head in the break. There's policemen that are also going down there, and cities are left with the overtime bill, and we already know about the first piece of pork in this aid legislation, this aid package that was just passed, provided to municipalities around the country who weren't in the disaster area. They will get money to help pay for the overtime of the officers who are covering the slots of the officers who've made the trip down to New Orleans. Now, I want to know why corporations couldn't have been asked. There would have been plenty that would have stepped up in every community. They would have announced it. They'd have been proud of what they were doing. Why they couldn't have sponsored the police officers that are going down there? Why did this all have to be done by big government? See, for George W. Bush, the first solution, the second solution, and the last solution, every solution in between is big government. And I just wonder, how many different boondoggles, conservatives, how many different ones are you going to have to accept? Expansion in Medicare with a prescription drug benefit, creation of a brand new cabinet-level department that doesn't even work called Homeland Security, a war in Iraq that just is extraordinarily expensive. It's stuck in a quagmire right now. We went in under false pretenses, and now $200 billion-plus to be spent to rebuild a city that maybe shouldn't be rebuilt, at least the way it was built before. How much? At what point is this guy no longer your guy? At what point do you stand on principle? That's a rhetorical question because you can't call me, unfortunately. But I'm glad to have a guest joining me. That's a very special guest. As we say at the top of this show, we run an ad in every show. I do a GOA update in every show. Gun Owners of America is a sponsor of this show, and I'm very proud and pleased that that's the case, and pleased to be friends with Larry Pratt, the executive director, who is finally able to join me tonight. Larry, welcome to the Culture Repair Show.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's really good to be with you.
Well, you know, now this is for our listeners. They're used to hearing me every week do a GOA update, to take time out to talk about something your organization is doing, and to plug your organization's website, gunowners.org. So this will be like one great big GOA update, this program will be.
Okay.
And we were eager to get Larry on, but Larry has not come on a Sunday. He's available to come on a Friday, and so this ended up being the perfect opportunity. I'm traveling, and Larry's available to be here. Larry, you guys are listed as the only no-compromise gun lobby in Washington. I say that every week. What does that mean?
Well, it means that we see politics as inherently confrontational. And if you approach the political system unaware of that or refusing to acknowledge that, you're really not likely to be as effective as you otherwise could be. And what we have found is that the big government folks seem to be particularly tuned to this political truth that politics is confrontational, and they keep coming. They don't like to take no for an answer. They act as if they won't take no for an answer. And meanwhile, the defenders of freedom, and certainly gun rights spokesmen have been included in that number, I'm afraid, have all too often tended to say, well, let's try to show them how reasonable we are. Well, being nice and being reasonable, at least in their terms, their definition of reasonable, two different things. I think we can be nice and intransigent. Because what it all amounts to, especially in the area of defending essential liberties, is we're not talking about how we're going to get something from the government, and if we ask for $100 worth of something and only get 50, well, gee, we're 50 bucks further ahead. The only thing that happens in a fight over freedom is either keep what you got or you lose some of it. And so we think it's absolutely essential that we take this no-compromise view into the political arena.
Okay. So you're saying then first, in order to achieve victory, first you have to seek it.
If you don't ask for what you want, you can be sure you'll never get it.
Okay. And so put some clothes on this. Are there organizations that are defending gun rights that are not, that are compromising, that are not going the distance?
Yeah, the NRA has the same goals as we. They want to see people be able to keep their guns. But they're convinced that unless they have a seat at the table, even if the table is populated by people like Senator Kennedy or Dianne Feinstein, people who qualify, I think, in anybody's book as gun grabbers, that somehow they won't be as effective as they need to be, that you've got to be part of the whole process. Well, you can be part of the process without being part of the problem. It seems to me that if sitting down at the table is distinctly not what Christ did when he went into the temple. When there were tables there that didn't belong there, he just pitched them over. And it seems to me that defenders of freedom ought to have the same idea. When we see some character sitting down at an unconstitutionally maintained table, we ought to go in there and try to pitch it over.
Okay. Well, now you guys have got several hot things going on right now. You guys have issued three updates in recent days, and I want to take time to go through all of them. One of the first one I want to start with is kind of near and dear to my heart at the moment, because for the last 2 weeks, we've been talking here primarily about what's going on in New Orleans, what's been in the news.
You know, I heard your some of your run-up to this point, and I would like to try to put the gun confiscation, that's not really a good word, the gun stealing that was done by the government, to put that into perspective. And I think you were, I didn't hear all of what you said, and maybe I'm just repeating what you, the points you've already made, but I see New Orleans as one of the more dramatic laboratory experiments that's been conducted in recent years to demonstrate whether government is an effective agency for dealing with a crisis or whether the private sector is.
I agree with you completely, Larry, and I think in the early days, in the first few days that this was going on, I was on the phone with my partner at DownsizedDC.org, and I was saying, I feel like right now we're at a pivotal moment where we have people are seeing on TV, they're seeing reporters upset, crying, angry. We're at a pivotal moment where people are getting to see what really went on when the tsunami hit and government showed up to take care of that. Over in Asia, when we're rebuilding Iraq, they're getting a chance to see on their TV in their own country what it's like when government comes in and takes care of us.
That's right.
But I think what I'm scared of here is that moment has passed.
Well, yes and no. If people go to gunowners.org, they're going to see something there when they click on the gun confiscation in New Orleans section that is going to give them a view that was seen by only a handful of people in the country on television. They can see it on the website at gunowners.org.
We're going to talk about that when we come back. Gunowners.org, it's right near the top of the page, these updates are. We're going to point you to the right one when we get back from the other side of the break. And I want to talk to Larry, too, about the stuff that they're doing to protect gun manufacturers from frivolous lawsuits, so don't go away. Several days after the Patriot Act was passed, a printed version was made available for Congress to read. Yes, I said several days after the Patriot Act was passed. But that's not unusual. Congress routinely passes bills that has little or no time to read. I'm Jim Babka with DownsizedDC.org, and I say it's time for a new American revolution with the slogan, No Legislation Without Representation. Congress cannot claim to be representing us when they don't know what's in the bills they pass. They shouldn't take the words of lobbyists. They shouldn't rely on unelected staff. And they shouldn't take orders from the party leadership because, after all, they're supposed to represent you. At DownsizedDC.org, you'll find a bill that should be the law of the land. It's called the Read the Bills Act. You can read it at our website, DownsizedDC.org. Better yet, you can use our simple system to tell your elected representatives to sponsor the Read the Bills Act. Write it down, DownsizedDC.org. Segment of the Culture Repair Show, and I'm your host, Jim Babka. We're being joined on today's episode by Larry Pratt. And you'll notice I'm not giving out the phone number if you just tuned in. We taped this show on Friday evening because I am committed to you. Even though I'm supposed to be packing and getting ready to go to Washington, D.C. to meet on Capitol Hill with 10 different legislative offices, House and Senate, to locate a sponsor for the Read the Bills Act. You can read about it at DownsizedDC.org. We've talked about it on the show before. We actually want to do something novel. We want to make Congress read the law as it passes. And so you can check that out if you want. But we're joined right now by Larry Pratt. And I'm glad that he's able to be with me on this Friday evening as we're taping this show. I always advise every week, Larry, that people check out gunowners.org. But there's a special reason that they should be checking out gunowners.org right now. And that is that you guys are showing a video. Let me quote you directly from your site. You said GOA has constructed a special section, and you give the link address there on the website so that gun owners, media pundits, and congressmen can see for themselves what is happening in New Orleans. What's happening in New Orleans?
Well, an example of the overall picture that you were describing of the failure of government and the great success of the private sector, and it seems to me such an amazing contrast. Walmart had everything people would want after a hurricane. They had it pre-positioned. FedEx, Home Depot, the Red Cross, the Salvation Army, Samaritan's Purse, all these charities were there with their trucks. They were being turned away by authorities who I think resented the fact that the private sector was there, and fishermen who brought in a fleet of 500 flat-bottom boats were told by the Fish and Game Department, we have it under control. Get out of here.
Yeah, they're doing this, and you may be onto something here. I noticed that when George Bush last night in his speech decided to praise the private sector and the money that they raised, the very first people he referred to was Bill Clinton and his father.
Yeah, right. Well, included in private sector successes were citizens protecting themselves. There's an adjacent town south of New Orleans called Algiers, and they actually had a shootout when thugs, looters, invaded their territory, their neighborhood. They shot back. There were a lot of shots fired, and you know that the area was dry because when the thugs fled, they went out in the street where the thugs had been, and they found blood on the dry street. And in a section of New Orleans called the Garden Sector or whatever, I think it's Garden something, same kind of thing happened. Then after about 9-10 days, in come out-of-state police, in come National Guard, in come U.S. Marshals, and they start evicting people. And you can see from our videos that the areas from which they're being evicted are dry. And what they're doing is stealing the people's guns and then leaving them defenseless in this one very upscale neighborhood.
All right, I've got to ask this question, Larry. How do they know that these people have guns?
They were going door to door.
And they're just asking?
Probably they saw that the people had guns because the people are sitting there at the ready. They're still protecting their property. They didn't realize that the I'm here from the government, I'm here to help you, may not be quite a straight story.
Right.
And so the one that we don't have a video of, but there was a Washington Post description, which I thought was as hair-raising as any. Apparently there had been some flooding where this lady had a convenience store. She had been provident enough that she had a generator, and she was keeping her store in operation, even though most of her customers were gone. But the article describes, as the waters recede and the people are coming back, that set the stage for the U.S. Marshals, who worked for Mr. Gonzalez, the Attorney General, who, of course, works for Mr. Bush. They came, they stole her guns, and they threw her out, even though she's still, you know, now she's getting ready to sell her beer, sell her ice, sell all the other things of her convenience store, and the government pitches her out after the problem is over. I really think there is a rage among these control freaks that people were able to provide for their own food, provide for their own protection, that private business ran circles around the governor and the mayor and the president. They're bickering as to who goes in first and who failed first and all this. But meanwhile, the private sector is just doing a job.
It is doing a job, and that's the whole point. That's what we've been trying to say at DownsizedDC.org as well. We're making the same message that you're echoing. We've done it at DownsizedDC.com, where we've been telling the stories of private, you know, actions meeting the needs that are there. We've been talking at DownsizedDC.org about how they're being blocked. We talked about the radio show. I've spent time, 2 weeks ago, Larry, I fed this audience with a fire hose. There was so much to say, even after the first few days, about the government's failure. It's just extraordinary. You said in here, though, that many offices in Capitol Hill are unaware that gun confiscations are occurring.
We have been amazed. Talk show hosts that didn't know anything about it until they got our release. Same with folks up on the Hill, until our members responded to things that they had seen from Gun Owners of America. Now we have an email that we were inviting people to send to their representatives to try to get some action so that there would be a measure on the next gazillion dollars that they shouldn't be spending down in New Orleans that would stop them, put them in jail if they take people's guns during a crisis.
I asked on the show last week out loud, I didn't get anybody callers that knew the answer to this question. Maybe you do, Larry. Under what color of law, under what code, statute, are they able to come in and take people's guns? What's going on here?
Well, I thought Judge Napolitano, the commentator that they have on Fox, said it best. Zero color, no color, no authority. The federal government has the power given by we the people to defend the country if there's an attack. If we have an invasion even of illegal immigration on the southwest border, fine. That's a proper role for the government, for the militia, really, to be involved in. But this is a domestic humanitarian event. There's no authority in our federal constitution for the federal government to be involved at all. And now we can see why. All they do when they get involved
really,
is screw it up.
Can people really see why, though? I mean, it seems like Bush's speech was well-received last night, particularly by the media. I mean, Timmy Russert was jumping up and down like a very excited
well, of
child.
Course, because the
you
media...
You know, say, FDR, we're going to relive the New Deal. We're going to have the first city of the 21st century. We're all going to be united. It's going to be wonderful.
Judge Napolitano correctly referred to Mr. Bush as Franklin Delano Bush. And I think that sums it up. So most of the media, indeed, just as you say, was celebrating the speech because they celebrate big government. They look at themselves as the defender, the spokesman for the government. They used to have an adversarial role, but now the only adversarial role they have is against we the people.
Now, Larry, as we're heading to the break, about 20 seconds, what can be done about this?
Please go to gunowners.org. Take advantage of the email we've got written. You can sign up for future ones. You can make a difference.
All right. It's called Media Politicians Keeping Gun Confiscation Quiet. It's right near the top of the page at gunowners.org.
Yep.
Stay tuned through the break.
Yeah. Larry Pratt's latest book is now available. On the Firing Line, Essays in the Defense of Liberty can be purchased from Gun Owners of America for only $18 plus shipping and handling. On the Firing Line is a collection of essays that GOA's Executive Director Larry Pratt has written over the last few years. They were composed in the battle to defend the right to keep and bear arms, as well as the rest of our liberties protected in the Bill of Rights. Pratt has taken on the arguments used by the enemies of freedom who would disarm and subjugate Americans. Pratt shows that the debate transcends firearms because the debate is really about control. Who will control the lives of private citizens? Will it be each person individually, or will it be the government? You can order your copy of On the Firing Line by going to the GOA website at gunowners.org. Or you can call GOA's toll-free number 1-888-886-GUNS. That's 888-886-GUNS.
This is the Culture Repair Show, and I am your host, Jim Babka, and I'm joined today by the Executive Director of Gun Owners of America, Larry Pratt, and their website is gunowners.org. And I didn't really give you enough time in that last segment, Larry, but you guys, and I'll just mention this because I want to get on to some other stuff, but you actually have legislation that you're proposing to deal with the situation in New Orleans right now.
Yes. There's already a law in the book that says that it's a punishable offense for someone in the government to conspire to violate civil rights of citizens. That would be one way that they might be hooked, but that's something where they might find, as they usually do, some wiggle room. So we've gotten some language drafted that would not have much wiggle room. It would say that during a crisis, from a law-abiding person, it would be a punishable offense, 10 years in the pokey, for stealing somebody's gun under color of law.
A chance to throw Ray Nagin in jail, folks. You can do this at gunowners.org. Again, that's media politicians keeping gun confiscation quiet. I will go ahead and try to get this up on my blog tonight before I leave town so you can go link to it. My blog is jimbabka.com. That's what we do pretty much every week here, Larry. I make sure, because you guys have these long links, I just put them up at my blog so that people can go and they can just click on it from my blog and
read
it.
That's terrific. Thank you.
Is the House getting ready to roll over and play dead? You have here representatives need to insist on H.R. 800 instead of S-397. We've talked about this on the show before, but for the benefit of those that haven't heard before, what's at stake here? What is this bill about, and what's at stake?
Well, the bill underlying is a nice enough bill. It's designed to do away with the predatory lawsuits that have been brought by mostly municipalities and other units of government designed to punish the legitimate activities of a manufacturing and sales industry, the firearms industry, for what criminals do with their guns. Now, we hope this principle never succeeds and gets established in law, because then baseball bat manufacturers, automobile manufacturers, knife manufacturers, and so forth, the whole of American industry would be subject to a bunch of greedy lawyers going after them to destroy their business. Now, it passed the Senate, that's fine, but when it passed the Senate, the leadership of the Senate, Mr. Frist, the senator from Tennessee, allowed a couple of amendments to be put on, and the one that's most troublesome, perhaps most immediately troublesome, is an amendment that would require the sale of some kind of locking device on a gun when it's sold in a store. Now,
a trigger lock.
Trigger lock or some other kind of lock.
Now, wait a minute, Larry. Just let me play devil's advocate for just a second. And clearly I'm playing devil's advocate here. What's so bad about a trigger lock? I mean, they make people safe. They protect children.
That's where I wanted to go. Actually, I'm glad you did ask the question, because I think we need to address that. What we do know is that the criminal will not have a lock on his gun when he's attacking, when he's invading your home. And if you have encumbered yours, I can assure you what will not happen. because of the adrenaline rush, you will lose manual dexterity of your fingers. You probably won't be able to operate effectively the safety on the gun. That's why a revolver is probably a better home defense handgun, because there's no safety on it. And you won't certainly be able, even if you can find where you put the blasted key, you won't be, or remember the combination or whatever, you won't be able to operate the lock in time to use the gun other than to throw it at the criminal. You'll have a 4-pound object you can hurl. We've already seen the results from states where this kind of thing has been made mandatory for use, which is the next step, by the way. Just like seatbelts were put in cars, and we're not going to say you got to put them on. You just want them to be put in cars so everybody at least has a chance to use them.
Right.
And then the next law was, got to wear them. And then the next one was, if you don't wear it, that's going to be something that an officer can pull your car over and snoop through unconstitutionally and so forth. And so we know that that's what's coming next. And for people to have voted for something that is basically locking up your safety, if you're worried about your gun being stolen, put it in a safe. But if you have a gun for self-defense, you better have it so you can use it in an emergency, even when you're physically going to be somewhat impaired because of the adrenaline rush that, it happens to soldiers, it happens to cops, so don't think it's not going to happen to one of us.
So H.R. 800 is not unencumbered by this provision.
H.R. 800 is the House version of the same bill, same language, without the anti-gun amendments. And we're urging the House to use its own bill and send that to the Senate and say, this is the right version, forget yours. And
I have to tell you, Larry, I'm a little concerned because the very first words in your update here say that Jim Sensenbrenner is the one that's basically got to make the decision here. This is the guy of Real ID Act fame. He's the one that wants to incarcerate people who don't tattle on their neighbors for having drugs in the house. Is he going to make the right decision here?
It's a weak read, I realize, and that's one reason why public pressure on their own members of Congress to then put pressure on him. And the next request we're making is to try to get the head of the, it'll be out next week, the head of the Second Amendment Caucus to put pressure on the leadership. It could happen, but it's not going to happen in a vacuum.
Okay, so this is House getting ready to roll over and play dead. It's also an update located right near the top of the page at gunowners.org. My guest is Larry Pratt, the Executive Director of Gun Owners America. We're going to talk about one more question when we come back, one more update, so don't go away. Imagine you're on trial. The charge against you, violating one of the hundreds of laws Congress passes each year. You rise in your defense and say, Your Honor, I didn't know about this law. How will the judge respond? I'm Jim Babka with DownsizedDC.org, and I think you know the answer. The judge will reply, Ignorance of the law is no excuse. So what's the excuse for your representatives in Congress? Their ignorance is even worse. They don't even read many of the laws they pass. At DownsizedDC.org, we're proposing a simple but powerful idea, the Read the Bills Act, to force Congress to read the laws they pass. Why? Because we believe the federal government is way too big. We want to slow the politicians down. We want to reduce the size and power of the federal government, and we want them to sweat the details, just like you do. Check out DownsizedDC.org, because ignorance is no excuse, even for a congressman. It's got to be killing some of you that you haven't been able to call in and get in on this conversation today with Larry Pratt, the Executive Director of Gun Owners of America. I'm really glad that he's been able to be my guest here today. Larry, one final thing. You guys have a brand new update as well about the Supreme Court. This is obviously a very crucial issue to your supporters. What do you want to say about the Supreme Court nominations?
Well, we're very concerned, even about Mr. Roberts, an obviously brilliant man, but he's got the idea that he has expressed, his idea that the government has interests, and that those interests need to be balanced against people's rights. That is a wildly unconstitutional view. It is not true. We have no interest in the government, only responsibilities that have been given to them by we the people. We're concerned that Roberts is no Scalia, no Thomas, as was promised by President Bush. And in fact, my guess is he's going to move the court to the left.
He's going to be Roberts in suitor clothing, as Ann Coulter put it.
I think she may look back and say she was pretty happy she wrote that.
Okay. And who could they have selected better?
Judge Kaczynski of the Ninth Circuit, son of immigrants, refugees from communist tyranny, Edith Jones, and I just went brain dead. There's a chap in Third District in New Jersey who ruled brilliantly on a machine gun case. So the guys and the gals are out there.
Janice Rogers Brown, too.
And Janice Rogers Brown, for goodness sakes, of course. So it's not as if people aren't there who are Scalia's and who are Thomas's and who really believe that the Constitution is the law of the land and not some stupid opinion that was very wrongly decided by some previous court. That the real precedent that has to be upheld is the Constitution.
Amen. Larry, I want to close the show as we're going to be coming up to the end of the show here in just about a minute. Talking about, I want to give out an award for the idiot of the entire New Orleans crisis. And I know it's kind of hard to find one. You would think there might be the FEMA director or it might be the mayor of New Orleans. But I really think this particular one takes the cake. Representative William Jefferson, Democrat of Louisiana, decided that he needed to get his stuff. And so he used his power as a congressman to basically commandeer a truck of military personnel, go to his house, which and get stuff out and load it on the truck, and the truck got stuck in the mud. And a helicopter with people on it who were being rescued had to stop and help the truck out of the mud. They didn't succeed. Jefferson wouldn't get on the truck, on the helicopter. And so a second truck had to be diverted and brought over. It had numerous armed personnel around him to protect him as he went to get his stuff out of his house on Marengo Street. This is just absolutely unbelievable. It's reported at ABC News. Folks, the politicians care most about themselves in this situation and their power, and that's why they're turning to themselves and they're taking more money from you so that they can grandstand and demonstrate that they're the solution to the problem. We have to downsize D.C. I want you to go visit Larry's website, gunowners.org. He's got video there that you can look at, stories about what's going on in the zone right now, and when you get a chance to see it, you're getting a chance to see, folks, very important, what it's like when government is running everything, making all the decisions for you. Well, as I said, I'm in Washington, D.C. right now, getting ready to have a fantastic week, getting a sponsor for Read the Bills. I'll be back to talk to you next Sunday.